Hey, this is Kevin Kelly, and you are listening to the Stardom Cast.
Everyone, and welcome to the Stardom Cast, a podcast where we talk all things about the fantastic, amazing, and spectacular professional wrestling company that is Stardom, and we do it in a positive, or I like to think, fun manner. I'm your host for this episode, this bonus Forbidden Door episode. My name is Matt Turner. Folks, I'm joined by two fantastic special guests, our editor-in-chief, one Sean Montrose, and the one and only Mr. Andy Hedder. Gentlemen, we are on our way back through from Forbidden Door. How did everybody hold up?
I thought it was a really good show. I'm feeling good. I woke up at 3 a.m. this morning, and I'm still going strong. It is now 12:25 a.m. Eastern Time. We are leaving the USB, whatever, USC, what is it called?
UBS.
UBS, not the UBC, or whatever. We're leaving the arena, but it was a good show, and it is connected a lot to Stardom because we had three Stardom people on the show.
In about 7 miles.
Members of the roster, so how'd you like it, Sean?
Good. I will take the hot tag here from Andy as... By the time we get home, it'll probably be close to 3 a.m., and I will be getting ready to get up and leave for the airport so I can go to North Carolina. So you got up this morning at 3 a.m. I'll be going to bed at 3 a.m. and then heading to the airport.
Oh, my God.
Overall, I thought it was a great show. I thought we had a good crowd. They were super hot, super early.
About 9,000 people, I'd say, were there.
Yep, they brought it back real hot at the end of the night, which we'll get to, but I mean, I thought it was a good crowd.
I think it was in... Like everyone always posts pictures and says AEW doesn't draw. I think it was at least 80% full, the arena.
Yeah, I thought
they
it was.
Around, there was some spare, and the top and the cheap seats were kind of some that were open. But most of it was full.
And I just want to point out that I think it was the best sign of the night. It was that swerve when I bruv.
Swerve when I bruv, which makes no sense, but it's funny.
Yeah. So, anyway, what did you think, man?
Oh, excellent show. The only issue we had, it took us 4 hours to go 97 miles. That is the heartbreak that is the traffic of New York, which I usually don't have any issues with traffic, but considering that we knew that the Tam and Momo Watanabe, our beloved Stardom wrestlers, two former Wonder of Stardom champions, were on the pre-show card. I got a little panicky, didn't think we were going to get there until past 6:30, even though we left my house at 2:30, but... Alas, we got there with plenty of time to spare. Once we got to the parking garage, it was like 5 minutes by the time we walked over the parking garage to the arena to get checked in and then go to our seats. So there was no issues, which I know sometimes, you know, you got to be secure nowadays. Sometimes that security takes a little bit of time, but no issues there. So once I got through that, we were good to go, brother.
Let's also talk about how we got there in a solid amount of time. And even when we got to our seats and all that, you know, we're like, hey, you know what? Why don't we go grab a drink?
Yeah, because the matches didn't start yet. There was still, the zero was on, but they were doing the whole pre-show game talk that we couldn't see anyway.
And there was a dark match, too. Yeah. So there's 15 matches on this card.
Yeah, so we're like, let's go grab a drink. No line for us. We had a drink stand with hard liquor and beer right outside of our seats. It was great.
Yeah.
We had no wait when we went to get food.
No, like, that was, the arena
bathroom
itself.
Was right there. Yeah,
yeah, it was clutch.
I have no problems with this arena at all. We were in, we were out. People told us where to go.
Staff was great.
Yeah,
the staff was phenomenal. This is a great arena. It just takes you. If you're gonna go to a show here, I would probably leave about 24 hours in advance, and you may get
there.
Folks, if you obviously listen to the Stardom Cast before, you know, these two gentlemen with me know that I'm a pretty positive person. I was losing my cool quite a bit towards the end, and it's just when traffic is something that drives me crazy because it's something you have no control over. But alas, we got there safe, everybody was a-okay, and now we are on the ride home. Matt Turner, I'm doing the driving, however, Sean, Montrose, our editor-in-chief. He's the one doing all the recording. So all I'm doing is talking about wrestling.
Ride the shotgun.
This is a great idea by Andy Hedder. He said, we're going to talk about the show on the drive home. We may as well record a podcast. So that's what we're doing. And I thought this was going to be up Monday or Tuesday, but literally, as Sean just said, he's in about an hour nap, and then he's catching a flight to North Carolina to spend down south for his anniversary. So, folks, this will probably, well, it's going to be, as you're listening to this, will probably be Friday, Saturday, give or take when it's up, because we overbooked Sean.
That's right. I'm going to do it. I'm going to have it up on Friday.
There you go.
Friday, it's happening.
There you go. But, yes, let's get into the show, folks, because this looks like we only, you know, 4 hours to get home, but only about 90 minutes. Our 4 hours to get to the show, but only about 90 minutes to get home. So let's get into this show. We had that opening four-way tag.
Well, first, you had the dark match. It was Pinnacle versus Kyle Fletcher. It was about 5 minutes. Kyle Fletcher over with the brainbuster on the top rope that Generico Sami Zayn uses.
I think it was a real snakey fought. I think Kyle Fletcher actually fought a real snake.
That was the dark match that we had.
Yeah.
And it was really funny because, again, I was panicking because we didn't know. Because it said 0 hour started at 6:30. So I was like, well, there's four matches on there. We didn't know the order. I'm like, no. I just don't want to miss the Momo and teaming with Chris Statlander versus Willow Nightingale and Tam. And we got there. We waited about 10, 15 minutes. We got a drink. And then we had the dark match before 0 hour. So there's plenty of time.
Darkest match.
So
can I say one thing about that dark sure match? Can. I'm sorry. You know what I would have really liked to see if we were going to get a dark match?
Well.
I would have enjoyed a dark order match.
A dark order match.
Dark order match.
Double dark. There you go.
So anyway.
Then we get into the actual 0 hour, and we have the House of Black picking up a win in a four-way dance. I thought the team of Ishii, Kyle O'Reilly, they really, really stole the show. Those two worked really well together. It was a really cool spot where Gabriel Kidd and Roderick Strong, two of the hardest choppers in all of wrestling, were like double teaming, chopping Ishii. And it was just like firing him up because he's Ishii. But it was just basically play the hits and go home, private party. They did all their cool stuff. Everybody fit in really well. And the crowd was really, really hot from jump from this match, guys.
Yeah, I caught the end of this match and get the whole thing. Wasn't the silly string into Brody King catching him for his driver move, which I don't know the name of.
Yeah, I believe that was the finish.
But it was cool, yeah. Not Mark Quinn. I get private party guys mixed up. But anyway, from what I've seen, the end was pretty good.
I almost messed up just now when you said I can't remember the guys, and you said Mark Quinn. I almost called the other guy Quez Watkins, who was a wide receiver in the NFL.
Yeah, that ain't it.
That wouldn't have been him. No, and then we did go into our Stardom match with Chris Statler and Momo Watanabe, and both Stardom wrestlers got very, very great reactions.
Dude, they were awesome
when they came out. Yeah, I mean, Momo Watanabe is supposed to be this big badass heel, and she got you. I know, Sean, you were with me at the ECW Arena for that Stardom show. She got like probably the second biggest reaction on that show behind Micah, who's the World of Stardom champion, as far as like a face reaction.
Yeah.
And Momo, she's been a heel for 3 years. They teased a face turn about 2 weeks ago for about 2 minutes going back to Queen's Quest, but we didn't get it. I literally oohed and ahed when I thought it was going to happen at 6 a.m. But regardless, Momo and Statlander worked really well together. Tam and Willow Nightingale, they worked really well together. And I may mention this to everybody around our seats, because we did have a couple people asking me some Stardom questions. And thanks to, I guess, all of our new listeners, because it seems like we're going to have a few new listeners, because, again, a lot of people ask me about Stardom and just Joshi in general. But Tam and Momo never really had a big singles match in the last handful of years. Now, Tam did challenge Momo Watanabe back in, I believe, 2018. For Momo's Wonder of Stardom Championship. That was a completely different Tam that we would see over the next few years. So hopefully somewhere down... Oh, we're going to see them in the five-star. They are in the same bracket. Yeah, they are in the same bracket for the five-star. And I think Momo even did a backstage segment. But it was really nice. I figured Willow or Chris Statlander would get the fall here because we are on AEW. It is Forbidden Door is one of the bigger pay-per-views. But obviously Willow's hair stuff was great. Statlander stuff was good. Statlander was taking all sorts of suplexes on her head from Tam.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you don't see Statlander. She's one of the bigger women in the AEW women's division. So you don't normally see that. But she took a tiger suplex. She took a German suplex. And then the exchanges with Willow and Momo Watanabe were terrific. Like, just like, yeah, the forearm exchanges, the clotheslines, and obviously Momo with those mid-kicks. But ultimately, it was Tam Nakano hitting the Twilight Dream, or signature finisher, onto Momo Watanabe for the pinfall. I absolutely loved this match, and I loved how the Stardom wrestlers got over with the red-hot New York crowd, guys.
the Thames Bridge, as you said, you will not see a more perfect bridge for the rest of the night. I don't think, maybe there was from Zack Sabre, maybe Mercedes, but yeah, this match was really good. I just wish the crowd was full. It was like halfway full. There's still people coming in, but I wish the girls from Stardom had a full house to perform. But it's still good.
It might have been about 4,500 to 5,000 people. Yeah, much more than they're used to wrestling in front of.
Yes, and now that's the first time I got to see Tam and Momo live.
I will say, I thought it was great. I know that when we've talked about Stardom and first started showing me some things about Stardom, one of the things that I was surprised by with a lot of the Japanese wrestling is that the crowd isn't very loud.
And, not like American.
Yeah, right. Not like an American crowd. And so I said to Andy when we were watching this match, and I felt really happy for the Stardom wrestlers that they were able to get these ovations from the American audiences. You know what I mean? And get that respect. And they were super over. You know, I thought it was really, really great. You know, and the finish was different. Like, I didn't think that's who was going to be involved in the finish. You know what I mean?
No, I didn't think so.
I thought you'd get at least one of the American wrestlers and then one of the Stardom wrestlers, but it didn't turn out that way. Big hot tags.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, that was good.
Yeah, really good stuff. Then we go to our next women's match. We have a first round in the Owen Hart Cup as Saraya, the former Paige, taking on one Mariah May. And this was a good match. It wasn't as good as their match they had about a month ago. That match they had about a month ago, Mariah May really went out to make sure she would give Saraya a fantastic match and bumping all over the floor. This was more or less a lot of interference, a lot of guys. We saw Tony Storm in almost like a Stardom-esque tracksuit
come out
and really help. It was all what's the girl that comes out with Saraya? Haley Cameron?
Yeah, Carly Cameron.
Yeah.
Carly Cameron.
So she was doing her interference. Yep. It was basically like your back and forth, 1980s TV match. Mariah May, obviously, she's fantastic here. It was basically an easy baby face versus heel story. It was easy for the crowd to get involved. And then once Toni Storm did her one spot in the match, the crowd just blew up because Toni Storm is crazy over. And then Mariah May was able to get the win with the schoolboy or the schoolgirl. Again, a really, really solid match. Mariah May, she's fantastic. My pick to win the Owen Hart Tour would go all the way. Maybe that's just wishful thinking because I'm just a huge fan of one Mariah May. But I thought it was a good match. Easy story to tell, guys.
We're going to have many opportunities to educate Sean. Okay.
Sure.
So let's educate Sean about something. Did Toni Storm wear a lot of tracksuits?
She sure did.
Was that her thing?
Oh, no. In Stardom, all the girls wore tracksuits in Japan. Either the guys, the girls.
Oh, that's the thing?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I learned something today.
Look at that.
Andy.
And Toni Storm's hair was also on curlers, which
I loved that.
Yeah, so she was preparing for her eventual outfit that we'll get to. But I really like this match. I'm not the biggest Saraya / Paige fan. Obviously, she's not what she once was. But Mariah May, I'm a big fan of. I like when she does her spinning twirly. It's like the airplane spin into the sidewalk slam. She does that.
Oh, yeah.
And she's over too with the whole fake Toni Storm gimmick.
I love that so much.
It wasn't. Is it the match you have to go back and watch as per you know, but it's entertaining. And Mariah May won. I agree with you, Matt. I think she is going to win the Owen Hart and then go on to wrestle Toni Storm at Wembley Stadium for the AEW Women's title.
I agree. I agree with that 100%.
Considering the fact that she is from England, maybe her and Will Ospreay have some family love in Wembley. But obviously, Will Ospreay's getting a lot of love from us at the end of the podcast, so we'll get that to review that phenomenal must-see main event. Speaking of main event, we go to the main event. I'm sorry, but do you want to
say something? Can I say that I'm in love with Mariah May?
I think we all are, buddy.
Who isn't?
That's
correct. Might have to fight Nigel McGuinness for Nigel's commentary when she's on Collision. It's so funny.
Yeah.
It's so funny. Nigel's terrific.
You'd have to fight Toni and Mina for her.
You know what? That is a fight that I'm willing to lose.
Again, who wouldn't?
Anywho, we go to the main event, which Mystico.
Oh wait, we didn't talk about Toni's gear.
No, we didn't.
Her entrance.
We'll get that there when we're.
Oh God, we're talking about the Mariah match. Yeah. I'm sorry, I'll stop. He and just you wants can come
to
back in.
Oh, John just wants to make sure I'm paying attention while I'm trying to get us home safely from New York City.
I'm so sorry.
That's what a good brother does. We go to the main event with Mystico teaming up with the Lucha Brothers. managed by Alexandra. I forget how you say his name.
Alexandra?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a female now.
Alex.
No, none of us can say it. Alex Abrahantes.
There it is.
My wife would be able to say it. And the reason why is because he actually works for QVC. He sells computers on QVC. And my wife is a massive fan of QVC.
Still?
Every time that I turn... Absolutely.
I didn't know it was still around.
Every time I turn on the TV and I see QVC on the TV, I wonder what I just bought. But anywho.
She don't listen.
My wife's an amazing, amazing person. And she actually packed a snack for our road trip. And she's terrific. Anywho. They took on the team of Yoshiyuki, Hiromu Takahashi, and was it Teton,
yep.
Andy?
Yeah. Yes, it was Teton.
That was a really, really solid match. A lot of high pace, high flying action, but it was Mystico that did wind up getting the win. But this was a really, really fast paced match, and this match was crazy over with the crowd. It's absolutely insane that if you didn't order this pay per view. And then, which is fine, I understand $40, $50, everybody's dollars is, stretched thin. But the fact that they gave us these four matches free on their YouTube, I thought was just genius from AEW.
Yeah, I agree.
We have donuts?
This was,
Andy's fetching. Andy's on donuts,
there's two donuts left, and I ate four.
You ate four? Yeah. I'll take whatever one you don't want.
Okay, chocolate sprinkles is what you're getting. As we pull donuts out of a box, this is terrible radio.
Shout out to Duncan. Please sponsor the Stardom Cast.
I love that, The trios match was a lot of fun. It was a lot of spotty stuff, a lot of lucha, a lot of arm drags and ranas and dives and everything like that, and the waterfall finish. And it was spotty, but it was very good. And the crowd was into it, and that's a good way to get basically what would be the last opener before the pay-per-view, to get the crowd hot and get ready for the first match of pay-per-view, which is the match most people are going to be watching. And you want the crowd up and not just sitting there. So it was a good match for that. Again, not one you have to go back and must see, but it was very entertaining.
It felt very reminiscent. I think it's a natural comparison. It felt very, very reminiscent of the old WCW Nitro days where you open. Even if it's not the actual opener on the main card, you open with a hot cruiserweight match, meant to get that crowd fired up.
The first time, aside from Nitro, the first ECW pay-per-view when it's the international contingent of the Blue World Order versus another team, that six-man was like, that reminds me, this moment tonight reminds me of that, where it's just like this hot, early on the card match that just gets everyone going with tons of moves and spots and stuff.
I think they got the first pyro of the night, too.
I believe they did. The pyro was shockingly loud.
Uh-huh.
It did sound like a gunshot.
We are in New York City, so I was a little scared.
It might have just been some gunshots.
I was a little scared. So we go to our opener, which... Go ahead, Heather. I don't want to talk with my mouth full.
Okay, so we started the pay-per-view, and we're in Long Island, so who better to start with than Hetchizero versus one... MJF. Hetchizero comes out, gets booed a little bit, then MJF comes out and he gets the Heroes Invasion. MJF is obviously over everywhere, but he's really over in Long Island. And this match was pretty good too. There's a lot of kind of shticky 80s stuff with MJF and stuff, but then he wins with the Panama Sunrise and then the Brain Buster. So he did Adam Cole's move, so who knows when Adam Cole comes back and his fireworks go off to her side there.
Yeah,
but it was for a first match. Very, very entertaining, very good. Hetchizero got his crazy submissions in, but MJF got his MJF stuff in, the reversals into eye poke and stuff like that. But a solid first match, MJF over, and we'll see a little bit more of MJF later on.
I will say, while I very much enjoyed the match, one thing that, he came back, he's in phenomenal shape.
He changed
his body, transformed himself. is it just me or. I feel like MJF is better than a brainbuster finisher. Why the brainbuster? If there's a reason that you think, and what else could it be? Because I don't know.
He goes to the neck.
Yeah, I don't know why he started doing that. Because obviously, he always did his heat seeker, short pop pile driver type gimmick, or his
Salt of the Earth.
Yeah, Salt of the Earth. So I don't know why he just should change it up. I understand that. Panama Sunrise is like spin the face of Adam Cole. I don't know why, but I guess he just wanted to, as they say, go away and learn a new hold, brother. So,
yeah.
Well, look at some of the best wrestlers, Liger, Kawada using the Brain Buster.
Mm-hmm.
And then who's the best wrestler on the planet right now? Hizuki using the Brain Buster. Yes. Even on an AEW show, we always got to shout out love for the Wildfire, as I christened it, the wrestling machine Hizuki. So maybe that's what it is. But yeah, I thought it was the Lucha submission style versus basically MJF style, like an MJF hometown guy. Everything he did, he got cheered for. He did a thunder of the eye, he got cheered for. They did a great job with crowd psychology. Mm-hmm. They didn't make you overthink. I thought both wrestlers look really good. MJF obviously getting the big win in his hometown. Yep. We go to the next match, which is kind of a dream for me. Because you have the six-person team of the Young Bucks and Kazuchika Okada taking on the Acclaimed and Tanahashi. What I mean by a dream for me is, in my opinion, the greatest feud / rivalry in the history of pro wrestling is Okada versus Tanahashi. And I know Tanahashi, God bless him, he's not what he was 7-8 years ago. That's because he's beaten up his body for the love of pro wrestling, for the love of the fans. But it was still really cool. And in New York, to see Okada and Tanahashi square off. You know, the Young Bucks, they have their match coming up with the Acclaimed, because the Acclaimed beat them, I think, last week in, the number one contender, the Eliminators match. So we know that that's coming up soon. So they gave us a mini tag match there, but then they milked us, giving us Okada versus Tanahashi. They milked it. And these two really, really turned back the clock from a handful of years ago. Really gave us really good stuff. And it really, one of the most surprising finishes for me was Okada pinning Tanahashi in the middle of the ring. I thought that maybe the Acclaimed would have got the win by pinning one member of the Young Bucks, or Okada would have pinned one member of the Acclaimed. I didn't see any of these former IWGP heavyweight champions eating a pinfall. But that's what happened. And Okada, one of the most over baby faces on the show.
I'd say
even though he's supposed to be a heel. Yeah, huge ovation, huge pop for Okada, guys.
I agree, especially when he was doing his, Caster's headphones.
Oh, yeah.
On, and then Okada's dancing like he's rapping, and that was really over. But yeah, all his moves and stuff, but I love Okada, so to see Okada and Tanahashi live touch, because when we went to that New Japan show in the arena in Philly, Okada was not on it, but Tanahashi was actually tied with the Rock and Roll Express, which was really cool, but, yeah, this match was entertaining. It was fun, and yeah, like you said, Tanahashi not what he once was, but he is our president of New Japan. So our loss ain't gonna hurt him. It was cool to see him live.
Well, and one thing I'll say that we were talking about is because Tanahashi's not doing a lot of wrestling these days. Boy, did he lean into that Rainmaker. I mean, that it crushed him. You know what I mean?
I don't think there's any wrestler that's taking the Rainmaker as much as him.
That's fair. But yeah, I thought it was great. Thought the crowd was really hot. A lot of smart plays, a lot of smart spots in there. And of course, as I said I was going to mention, I thought it was really great for Okada and Tanahashi to get really good respectful response from the crowd, especially for that finish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. Really good stuff. Go to the next match. It was Craig Bam and Ram, gentlemen. It was the Owen Hart tournament match, Dragon vs. Dragon, correct?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, this was, boy, howdy. I mean, they had a great match at Dragon Gate some, I think, 14, 15 years ago when Brian Danielson was fired for choking out the announcer with the tie.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was the guy that
it was Justin Roberts.
So he did a whole bunch of. He's really weird that Ring of Honor never picked him up for a couple dates. I think they couldn't because
of
a pay-per-view or something like that. But so he worked a whole bunch of Dragon Gate and Evolve shows, and he had this great match with Shingo there. So I knew they would have a good match. And this match was, in my opinion, the second match of the night, second best match of the night. This was absolutely terrific. Really great stuff back and forth between these two. We knew they were going to deliver, and boy, howdy, did they deliver, gentlemen.
Yeah. Right away, that match was on fire. Right? Yeah, people were excited.
It started hot, too.
Yeah, go ahead. You take it, Andy.
I forget exactly how it started, but I don't think they locked up. I think they, right away started punching or something.
They went right to strikes.
But, and then the build-up when Anderson's in the corner and he's actually doing the yes taunt to the crowd.
That was the first time he's done that in AEW.
Yeah, because I know he kind of milked it and lets the crowd do it, but he doesn't do the pointing. But this was the full-on WWE Daniel Bryan pointing yes spot, which, hey, it's over. Why not use it? And he hits the psycho knee, and then Shingo kicks it out, which was pretty cool. But this match was very good. And like I said, second best match tonight. Maybe so. It was really good. I liked it.
I know he kicked out. I don't know if, I don't know if anybody's really kicked out of the psycho knee in AEW. I'd really have to take a deep dive of it.
Kenny?
I was going to say, I think Kenny did.
Remind me, gentlemen, because
MJF did.
That's right, MJF did. Never mind. What was the finish of that match? Does that match have 4 hours ago?
I was trying to write everything down. And then
it was the the double arm bar, which was a verbal submission.
Yes. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yes.
The verbal submission, because there was no tap. It was either verbal submission or Aubrey Edwards called for the bell because he couldn't defend himself anymore. But it was at the peak time to finish that match. He had great match. And I remember when that match was getting right towards the peak, I looked at you guys and said, I feel bad for the next match that has to follow that.
Yeah,
and it was the match that I was looking for the most. Timeless Tony Storm, former Stardom World, or former World of Stardom champion, the only wrestler in the history of Stardom to win a 5-star Grand Prix and the Cinderella tournament in the same year. She did that back in 2017. And this, it gets, you know, our Mina Shirakawa, you know, this is the match I was, you know, obviously I'm a Stardom fan, this is Stardom cast. This is the match I was probably looking forward towards the most. Mina Shirakawa came out to a great ovation. Fantastic new gear. Mm-hmm. And we didn't notice before the match started that Mariah May was in the corner waiting for both Mina and Tony, her two loves, with flowers, very much like how they do in the big Stardom main event matches, where they have the basically the seconds giving flowers to the two participants competing for the championships. And then Tony Storm came out. Sean, I'm going to tag you on this one because you jumped the gun 5 minutes ago. You want to talk about Tony Storm's entrance. Go right ahead, brother.
So the lights come down pretty well, and the screens, you see in black and white, you see the backdrop of New York, right? And I think they were playing God Bless America.
Yeah.
God Bless America. And you look at the top of the stage, top of the ramp, and there in the seafoam green clad outfit with the crown, holding a lit torch of fire, is the Statue of Liberty, Tony Storm, and it was epic.
Which is really funny considering the fact that Tony Storm is from Australia.
Yeah.
He is from Japan. Mariah May is from England, and I believe they had the Stardom ref. It wasn't Daichi. Unfortunately, Daichi wasn't there. I'm a huge fan of Daichi, a friend of the show, Daichi. But I believe the referee was one of the Stardom referees, so there was nobody there.
But you know what that does? You know what that's a reminder of?
It's funny.
Stupid Americans will cheer for anything.
Maybe it's like, you know, Hulk Hogan and Terry Bollea are different people. Maybe Timeless Tony Storm is American.
Yeah.
Tony Storm is from Australia, New Zealand. You know what I'm saying?
That's possible. That's possible. But I absolutely love this match. It took a little bit for the crowd to get going. Sorry, guys. It was I'm a little kerfuffle. Just want to make sure I'm in the right spot here. Yeah, just because the crowd was so just not tired, but trying to catch their breath from the last match. But once this match got going, this was absolutely fantastic. I love this match. I didn't think that there was a chance Mina was going to win the AEW Championship. I know I had a lot of people sending me messages last night and early this morning saying, no, Mina needs to win, and they gave me a whole bunch of reasons behind it. I'm like, Mina, they're 5-stars starting soon. They're not going to take Mina Shirakawa and the AEW Women's Championship away from AEW TV, especially how well Tony Storm's doing with it for 4, 5, 6 weeks. It's just not going to happen. But there was a lot of close falls here. Tony Storm gave Mina lunch. She took a lot of big bumps. She took the implant DDT off the top rope.
Then one in the ring with me after.
Yeah.
Yeah, took the Mina driver. Yeah, really, really good stuff. I mean, if you're obviously Tony Storm gets the win with the Storm Zero, the short pile driver. But if you were judging this on points, I think this was fair to say this was 60-40, even maybe 65-35 favor with Mina, guys.
Mina got a lot in here. Her new gear, the black, pink, and blue, was fantastic. I really liked her new gear. But yeah, Mina got a lot of offense in here. This match was good. This was obviously, like, for me, because I'm a huge Tony Storm fan, this was probably the match I was looking forward to the most. This and the main event, and maybe Danielson versus Shingo. And, I was very happy with it. It was a good match. And most of these matches all tonight were working with this one. I don't know. Maybe my third favorite. If we're going to put the main event and then Danielson, and then this will be my third. But yeah, Mina looked great. And I'm sure they'll be trying to sign her once her contract's up.
Yeah, they have until April. Yeah. Stardom's got some time. So, Sean, why don't you ring in there, good sir?
No notes. You guys covered it.
Okay.
Honestly, really. I think you covered everything.
You know what you didn't cover after in the match?
Oh, no shenanigans, which I love.
Yeah, the battle from Mariah May. They're all there. What do they all do? Do they fight? No, they all hug. Then they back away. And then they all go in for it. And three-way kiss, baby.
Yep. And Mariah was happy because
she got both of them.
They shook hands. You know, everybody. It was just love.
No, I got a new trio. New trio going for the artist of Storm Titles.
And you had it. You took the words right out of my mouth.
I'm for it.
You know, that's that would be something. That would be something. We have heard several rumors. Our Tony Khan actually said on the press call just the other day or two ago that there's going to be a lot of, or a good amount of Stardom wrestlers, or AEW wrestlers, going over to Stardom. Right now, they're just working on issues, getting the visas all taken care of. Toni Storm and Mariah May, who have already been, you know, we've ran down Toni Storm's accomplishments in Stardom. Mariah May as well. I mean, she was former goddess of Stardom champion with one Mina Shirakawa. That would be something. Obviously, Mina's one-third of the current artists of Stardom champions, but maybe if they flip it to an Oedo Dai or a Stars or whatever. But can you imagine Toni Storm, Mina Shirakawa, and Mariah May going up against artist champions, say, Suzu Suzuki, May Sarah, and Starlight Kid. That would be something. That would be really, really entertaining. But really good match. I thought there was going to be something was going to happen with Mariah May, considering the fact she had the champagne bottle accidentally smashed over her head this past weekend on Dynamite. So I thought there'd be some interference. I don't like interference in my wrestling. I thought we were going to get some here because the story may have called for it. We didn't. We just had a straight-up match with Toni Storm getting the win. But again, they made Mina Shirakawa look like a huge star. And I don't know if you saw the interview that Bryan Danielson did with Sports Illustrated, but he was saying how him and Tony Khan are completely blown away how Mina Shirakawa is able to connect with the AEW American audience.
Well, she has charisma. I mean, obviously, you look at her, you see why. The males are interested in her. She is gorgeous, but yeah, she's a good wrestler, and she has charisma, and that's what you connect with people with, the charisma. Once they see you, they're like, but I like this girl. I want to see more of her. So
it's a combination, right? Mm-hmm. It's a combination. It's never one thing, you know? If you're really, really good on one thing, and you're really, really mediocre on another thing, you're not going to get...
Goldberg Warrior.
Yeah. That's right. Unless they book around it really well. But, yeah, no, Mina's, she's got all the tools. Yes. So, yeah.
Our next match was a match I completely forgot was going to happen as soon as it started. I was actually really looking forward to this. It's because there was what we thought 14 matches, but really 15. Zack Sabre Jr. taking on a good friend of ours that we ran the indies with for a long, long time. One Orange Cassidy, and this was really built up with Zack Sabre Jr. getting in Orange Cassidy's head, basically saying that, I'll technical wrestle you, I'm a better wrestler than you, and I'm going to submit you with your hands in your pockets. But I tell you what, our buddy OC did a great job keeping up to speed with the best technical wrestler in the world, guys.
Yeah, he got to show off a lot of the technical skills that he knows, that longtime Chikara fans know that he knows. So it wasn't just his normal, you know, sloth style, slow gimmick stuff, shtick that he does. He did a lot of technical pins and stuff, especially in the beginning. They were going back and forth with a bunch of like reversals and pins and stuff. And then fast forward to the end, that submission that Zach tied OC up in was crazy. It was insane. I don't even know
pretzel.
What to call it.
I think if I remember, me and Andy Edder, back in the day, we used to do a podcast. We talked about wrestling and comic books. And our main promotion we focused on was New Japan. Mm-hmm. I want to say, I could be wrong, they call that move Napalm Death. I think that's okay. Napalm Death. I think so.
That was really cool. It's like a pretzel type. He has his arms pinned with his legs and his legs with his arms. It was crazy. And that was the one where it was a verbal tap out. But yeah, and another good match. The crowd was a little bit down for this one, but like when you're seven matches in, you know, it kind of needs a little bit of a break. So the crowd wasn't real up on it, but it still was a good, enjoyable match.
Mr. Matros, our editor-in-chief, what'd you think of our good buddy OC going literally hold for a hold and 2.9 count for 2.9 count with ZSJ?
That reminds me a lot of Chikara wrestler Fire In.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I wonder what happened to him.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are breaking kayfabe here. All right.
He reminds me a lot of him.
Moving on to the next, and we're going to go to the match that... buddy Sean Montrose was very entertaining with the crowd, as we had the Learning Tree. Chris Jericho.
Hi, guys.
Chris Jericho, Big Bill, and Jeff Cobb taking on one of the coolest badass trios in all of wrestling. Hook, Samoa Joe, one of my favorite wrestlers to watch ever. Katsuhori Shibata. Folks, Jericho comes out and everybody's chanting, please retire. And then Jericho grabs the microphone and he says, that you guys don't want me to retire. I grew up here in Long Island. His dad, I don't know if you guys knew this, played for the New York Rangers.
And he said, I'm a hometown hero.
Ted Irving.
Yeah, it's really funny because Amber thought, wow, oh my goodness, we just had a terrible car accident. Folks, please be safe driving. Please be safe. Again, I am driving. Sean is doing all the end. I'm literally just talking about wrestling. We just had a really bad car accident.
I didn't see it.
the car split the guardrail.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah, I think he's the only, because there's no other cars here. Yeah, crazy. Anywho, we hope that person is A-okay. Thoughts and prayers.
Yes.
Thoughts and prayers.
I get really annoyed when, in my opinion, bad wrestling fans chant disrespectful things. And so I have to chant something completely to counter that. Otherwise, it's going to really annoy me. So people started chanting, please retire. And I started chanting, 10 more years.
And you got a whole section of people chanting that with you, buddy.
Yes, I did.
10 more years of Chris Jericho.
And I feel great about that. So, hi, guys.
I liked how this match started with Shibata. Like, as far as badass wrestling goes, you're not going to see too many wrestlers a more badass Shibata with Big Bill. And Shibata by no means is a small guy. Probably maybe 6'1", 6'2". But oh my goodness, those two started the match out. When those two started, I was like, holy jeez, Big Bill is huge.
And he's in wonderful shape. And he's now back to wearing the trunk tights.
Yeah, he looks really, really good. God bless him. I know he's, he recovered from a lot of really bad stuff. You really, really love seeing people, from the bottom coming back up. And he's having a great time, and a great run of pairing him up with Jericho. I think he's just absolutely genius. The crux of this match, though, what I meant to say is that's a big base for Shibata to throw forearms and kicks, which that's basically what he did in the beginning, which I thought was really good. The crux of this match was it looks like we're going to get something with Samoa Joe and Jeff Cobb coming, don't you think, Mr. Montrose?
I agree. Yeah, I mean, they seem to really set it up.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. What are your self-care non-negotiables? Maybe you've set aside some time away from social media every day. Maybe you find the time to put on your favourite Mayu Iwatani match. Maybe you never skip leg day or therapy day. When your schedule is packed like Ryo Goku with kids' activities, big work projects and more, it's easy to let your priorities slip. Even when we know what makes us happy, it's hard to make time for it. But when you feel like you have no time for yourself, non-negotiables like therapy are more important than ever. It's so important to make time for yourself, even when life can get so hectic. Therapy is helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to become the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's a service that is entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Never skip therapy day with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/stardom today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/stardom. And now back to today's episode.
When they were in the ring, it was very obvious that, they're eyeballing towards something.
It's a funny match, too. They were chanting me when they tagged in and they were hitting each other. Was the crowd chanting me?
Yep. Any ideas, by the way, for a name for those three sleepers?
Shibata Hooking.
Yeah.
Maybe Team Sleeper. Yeah, there you go. You just did it, buddy.
Shoot and sleep. By the way, we do not recommend trying to shoot in your sleep. Don't do that. It's very unsafe. Yeah. You don't want to do that. Just pick one or the other.
Yeah. good match. We got the pretty much whole entire section to really rally behind Chris Jericho. And I thought it was, I'm a huge fan of Chris Jericho, and obviously Chris and his team have been nothing but great to us in the Stardom cast. Been on his podcast a few times before. It looks like you know, in the future we'll be going back. But I mean, obviously, I've been a fan of Chris Jericho since I saw him wrestle in 96 for the first time in ECW. So I am not one of those guys at all. He's retired. Plus, he's still fantastic in the ring.
One of my favorites of all time.
He's still really, really good. Really can really go. I like how he's leading into this whole thing. But I was a big fan of me and Sean. Anytime Jericho had a submission on or a cover, we were like, that's the end. We can hear him submitting. And then ultimately, Hook hits Jericho with the Judas Effect. Not only does he pin Jericho, Jericho lays on the mat for a good 2 minutes. And me and Sean are yelling all the way from the top in section 300 saying, no, ref, you got to shoulder up. Could have pinned it for 200. But me and Sean were sticking to our guns, weren't we, brother?
Listen, Chris Jericho, if you listen to this, we believe you had your shoulder up. Ref was blind. You got screwed.
The ref took too long to wind up for the first count.
I will take that to the grave. Hook got away with one.
Highway robbery.
There it was.
From New York.
Next match, Craig Moore and Ryan Jones, that was the ladder match, right?
Yes, the six-way ladder match. Or, yeah, six-way, six people.
Yes, where we had team.
It seemed like the inevitable end.
Yes. This one was kind of one of the more predictable ones in the show.
Glad you were saying the lineup, sorry.
No, it's Takeshita. I thought would have had a really good shot at this, but he's actually announced for the New Japan G1 Climax, so they're not going to tie that up. So Takeshita, the scapegoat, Jack Perry, El Phantasmo, one of my favorite human beings I've ever met in wrestling, the great Mark Briscoe, current Ring of Honor, World Heavyweight Champion. And then also in this match, you had, Takeshita, Mark Briscoe.
Darius Martin.
Dante and Leo Rush. They were all fantastic. And I do have to point out, not only the Young Bucks match, but in this match, very loud CM Punk chants.
Yes.
The guy hasn't wrestled the promotion in almost a year. Yeah, and it's just amazing how insanely over CM Punk is just with wrestling fans in general.
Yeah. A lot of crazy spots, which, I mean, predictable, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, this is a way ladder match. And a lot of matches, that's someone who's been in many ladder matches, it's a spot fest. They just tell people, just remember when you get in, do your spots and get out.
There's this match had the best table break I've ever seen in wrestling. The best table break, table explosion I've ever seen. And it was Takeshita giving a blue thunderbomb on the outside.
Off the apron to the outside.
Yeah, off the apron to the outside. Do you remember who took it?
Phantasma.
Yeah.
It was Phantasma. Through two tables. And they looked like somebody triggered explosives under it because they just were obliterated. It was such a good spot.
Yeah,
I think it was the biggest spot of the match.
And it was the one to get them out of the way of Jack Perry going to the final.
Yeah, you always want to end your match at your biggest spots, and there was a lot of really big spots. I thought, to me, and maybe this is just my Ring of Honor bias, I thought the MVP in this match was Mark Briscoe.
Yeah, Mark Briscoe did a lot of cool stuff in this match. And it seemed like maybe he was directing traffic a little bit in there, too.
Yeah.
Especially near the end. Especially when he tried to set up a ladder that somebody already had went through, so it was really bent. He tried to set it up and set someone through, I think.
Takeshita.
Yeah, Takeshita.
So then he just wind up giving him a J-driller off the first run of the ladder.
That's so awkward.
And I swore. I threw an F-bomb, and there was a bunch of, teenage girls, and I'm like, I never swear. And I was like, what are they, bleep, are they doing?
Yeah. Also, we noticed, Andy and I were talking, those were the shiniest ladders ever, which made it very obvious to us then that those weren't fiberglass ladders.
Yeah. I'll tell you a little behind the curtains, inside baseball secret. The ladder that's a different color is your climbing ladder, and every other ladder is your working ladder. So your working ladder is the one you can slam people on. And your climbing one, you usually don't slam on.
Ladies and gentlemen, Andy Heder, folks. There it is. There is your lesson. But ultimately, though, no, it's Jack Perry that gets the win. He gets booed out of the building in a good way. He does have really, really good. If that go away, it's literally like, I will pay money to see anybody. I will pay money to see somebody kick your ass. Now, I don't know if anybody noticed this. Obviously, Jack Perry is supposed to be the most dislikable heel in AEW. That's his role. That's his gimmick. He plays it really well. But did you notice that when he grabbed the title, he looked up to the sky and had like almost a tear in his eye, almost basically telling his father, Luke Perry, the legendary actor, like, hey, Dad, look what I did. I noticed that.
I didn't notice.
I noticed. He was looking like he was fighting back tears, and then he looked up to the sky, and then it was, it's emotional. And then he's like, no, I got to keep it in a character.
it's his first big singles title in AEW. Obviously, he was tag champion before this, so I mean, you know, obviously your first title win is like your singles title win. It's a big deal.
Yeah, New York City in front of, you know, 9,000 people. I agree. Then we go to another phenomenal women's match. Champion versus champion, title for title, the ultimate challenge, Andy Henner, as we have Stephanie Vacker. And we're going to talk about her quite a bit here. The New Japan Strong Champion going up against the CEO, Mercedes Moné, the TBS Champion. And I just got to talk, Stephanie Vacker, my opinion, as far as stock rising, nobody on this card stock rose any more than one Stephanie Vacker. She's a phenomenal, phenomenal talent. Wrestles a primary in CMLL. We have seen her on some Stardom shows before. This is a rematch from last year for the first round of the New Japan Strong Tournament that she had with one Mercedes Moné. And that was the first time I've ever seen her wrestle before and was blown away. Not only was I blown away, but pretty much 9,000 plus were blown away by Stephanie Vacker. Literally the point of the last 4 or 5 minutes, they were booing Mercedes and cheering Steph Vacker. So they definitely have a star on their hand. And it all depends on who gets to sign her first. Will she sign with New Japan Stardom? Will she sign with AEW? Or will Triple H back up the Brinks truck and bring her into the Fed? I just don't see her in CMLL not too much longer, just because I think that she's a big money star. She's got a great look. She's got great timing. And here we are in New York, a hard crowd to get over with, especially with somebody that has the cachet, pun intended maybe, like Mercedes Moné, and the fact that the people absolutely loved one Steph Vacker. But I'm going to throw to you, Sean, but before I do, you're a sports guy, and I do have to ask you, because of a certain chant that was going on, do you think the heat on Mercedes, because Mercedes was great, this match was terrific, do you think the boos for Mercedes were A, because they love Steph Vacker, or B, because we are in New York, they love themselves the New York Knicks? And not only do the Boston Celtics, where Mercedes is from, Boston, did they win the NBA championship, but Mercedes was courtside for that championship game. Do you think because some of the New York fans are a little bit too passionate? Do you think that's maybe one of the reasons why she was getting booed towards the end? Because they were yelling, bleep the Celtics.
And then the Red Sox.
The Red Sox too. Yeah.
There are few things about New Yorkers that they are more passionate about than their sports teams. I think absolutely it had to do with her fandom. She's not shy about her fandom at all. And the fact that, the passionate rivalry between the Knicks and the Celts, and then they just won that championship. Yeah, you know, New Yorkers, they're not shy about their feelings.
Yeah, considering the fact that probably the biggest rivalry in the history of sports is baseball, with the Boston Red Sox and the New York Yankees. So that has something to do with it. And the fact that this is probably the best Knicks team they've had in about a decade, too. So.
Yep. Well, and I wanted to say, though, about the match, the one thing that I've been thinking this whole time, right, is, and you guys can certainly chime in if you disagree with it, I think Stephanie Vacker carried that match. I do. Like, I think it was a good match between the two. But she was so good. Stephanie Vacker was so good in that match. You know?
Yeah, she's a talented, no doubt about that. Mercedes held her own. I mean, she was good here, but I think there was some points where Stephanie Vacker was almost, I don't know, she just seemed like on a completely different level. But ultimately, I thought the match was really, really good. And then, Andy, had one of your favorites came out.
Yes. Well, first, the match was really good. And Steph, I think she definitely left the match more over than when she went in, which something you always want to do.
Tell the finish, Heather.
Finish was it with the two backcrackers into the submission?
It was the moneymaker into the bank statement.
And then her new, it's like the gory special where she turns into the gory bomb.
That's the moneymaker.
Yeah, the moneymaker. That was the finish. But at the point that Stephanie grabbed the crowd is when she got, Mercedes in the head scissors type thing, and then turned over and just was banging her head into the mat repeatedly.
So good.
And the crowd just, that's when, okay, we like her. And that's like, oh, she's really good. And she has a great look, and she has charisma, even though she doesn't really speak English. So, and then the crowd, Mercedes is a much better heel than she is babyface. How do you cheer for someone that comes out and says, I have a lot of money, and I'm the best thing ever? Like, right. It's hard to cheer for that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think she's miscast as a babyface, so I believe she should be a heel. And now, coming out of this, you have heel Mercedes, and Steph taking getting her a shot. And then the music hits, and back finally, after 9 months, is Britt Baker. She comes out, she looks great, she does her DMD thought, she gets a little bit of pyro. And Mercedes is clutching onto both belts, making pouty face. And the Steph, or as Steph walks it back, Britt's kind of just pointing at Mercedes, like, "Hey, I'm coming after you next." So there's your next new baby face for a new, freshly new heel Mercedes. I mean, that's a big money matchup right there.
I'm so happy to see Britt Baker.
I know she's
back.
Been out. The last time she had a match on AEW was last September.
What was interesting? Wow, that's been a minute. Mm-hmm. What was interesting to me is Britt came out, right? She came out to the stage, you know, did her thing, and then left. But she put ring gear on for that.
I think she had, like, kind of, like, you know, right before she left, she switched from just having normal trunks to having, like, these weird tights.
Yeah.
Like, the open, the baggy pants that were, like, had cutouts. I didn't like them. She kind of had that on. But she looked fantastic. So she's even better shape than she was ever before. So I'm excited to see Britt back. One of my favorites. I have a signed Britt figure of my Elite Britt, or whatever it's called, Supreme Britt. And I have every Britt figure for one chase. So, yeah, big Britt Baker fan. I'm so glad she's back. And her versus Mercedes should be a great match. How about her versus Stephanie? Even give me that. I hope they do sign Stephanie, because I don't see her be staying in CML long, because it's CML up against it.
Yeah. No, I agree. It was great to see Britt back. It was a really good match. And again, the crowd was hot.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you talked about Mercedes being a better heel, and I totally agree with that. And she also has that wherewithal where when the crowd really started to turn on her, she started playing a little bit of the heel role.
Yeah.
You know, with facial expressions.
Yeah, that's smart word or something.
You gotta.
Yeah, because if you don't, then it just... it just looks wonky, like when John Cena was here. So, although he was being told, hey, to stay babyface.
Yep.
He's making all that t-shirt money.
Yeah.
So, I do have to say, and I kind of mentioned this to you guys, like, obviously, Britt Baker got a huge pop. Everyone's glad to see her back. The landscape for women's wrestling has completely changed over the last 7 or 8 months. Britt Baker was an over-character, great promo, like, good to very good in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
She really needs to step up her game, because now you have a Mercedes, a Steph Facker. If she, depending on how long she stays, you got the Stardom girls coming over. You have Serena Deeb coming back after a year plus injury. She's terrific. Tony Storm's on a completely different level. When Jamie Hayter comes back, you'll have her, Sky Blue. So, like, if Britt Baker does, like, I mean, she's really got to up her wrestling games, because that DMD gimmick can only carry her so far.
Yeah.
Because if not, I mean, it's really going to be sink or swim with her, because the women's division is absolutely just insanely loaded. And obviously, you know, she's the biggest star in that women's division. Well, now it's Mercedes, but when she was champion, she may not have been the best worker, but she was the most over, the biggest star, great promo, great character work. But now if her in-ring isn't up to snuff, she's going to drown in there with, like, the Mercedes, with the Tony Storms, with the Venus, and so on and so forth. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do with her. I hope they don't pair her right away with Mercedes, because then it's just like, well, then Britt's going to eat an L as soon as she comes back.
Yeah.
Where do you go with it?
Yeah. And, you know, for a split second there when she came out and she's like, playing around for her entry or her pyro, I was like, is she gonna play? And then out comes Jamie Hayter too, which would be really cool. But I guess
that would have been
insane. She's still out yet. I mean, she's been out like over a year, poor girl. So hopefully see her back soon. But yeah, it's gonna have to up it a little bit. She wants to hang, but I think she could do it, because, like, if you don't up it, then you kind of go the way of Soraya. Yeah, it doesn't really work out too good for you. So
then we go to our co-main event, IWGP New Japan Heavyweight Championship, Tetsuya Naito, the former champion, challenging one John Moxley. Naito has made a statement saying if he loses this match, he is going to take himself out of the G1 Climax tournament that he won last year. And this was a match, folks. John Moxley did not come out to Wild Thing, and we realized, oh, well, it's a New Japan Championship match, even though it's in AEW, so that threw us off. And no bloody John Moxley.
Yeah, no,
that
blood.
Really threw me off.
He came out to his New Japan theme. This match, I don't know. I don't think these two really clicked here. It was slow. There were some cool spots, like when Nido was beating with part of the railing on the outside, and then production guy's face. But yeah, even the finish, they looked a little lost, and then finally Nido hits Destino and pins John Moxley 1-2-3, and it kind of was, since they were lost, it kind of felt a little like out of nowhere, but not in a good way, and it was kind of like, oh, he won. So I don't know, this match just didn't really click, and it was probably on the low end of the match of the show. Gentlemen, 3 stars. It's cool to see Nido in the U.S.
Big reaction, Moxley. Big pop when he came out. Yeah.
I like Nido, and obviously he's kind of like Tanahashi got a lot of miles on him now. So I mean, what's this now? The third or fourth time he's IWGP champion?
Pardon me, I believe the fourth.
I mean, it's cool to see him win a title in the States, but not the match you have to go back in this pay per view match.
Yeah, it just seemed like maybe they just had kind of an off night. These two have definitely had better matches against each other. So, before I go to the next match, Mr. Shawn Michaels, what did you think about Mr. Tetsuya Naito winning back the IWGP Heavyweight Championship?
It seemed like the crowd was really, I felt like they were really pro the change. You know what I mean? I agree, the crowd seemed down for that match.
And again, it's hard to keep a crowd hot for 5 hours.
100%. But I do think it was nice that, because it could have very easily been that in front of an AEW crowd, in front of an American crowd, Naito, winning that belt, they certainly could have booed him out of the house.
Yeah, or worse, they could have just been flat.
That's right. But no, they cheered him. Man. He was over.
Especially against Moxley.
Loved
in AEW. Yeah, it just didn't seem like they just were on it. And that happens. It's just unfortunate. I mean,
look at Okada and what's Ultimo Guerrero?
Unfortunately, it happens.
Not everybody can be on all the time.
And Okada's maybe the best wrestler in the world. So, yeah, it happens when you do it.
Yeah, but yeah, no, I enjoyed the match for the most part. Definitely some things could have been different. Again, I'm very happy that Naito won. Great crowd response. So that, you remember how it starts, now it ends.
Absolutely. Then we go to our main event. We mentioned how sometimes it's tough to keep a crowd, especially when you're seeing anywhere between 5 to 5.5 hours of wrestling. Good God. From the moment this match started, this crowd was into everything that Swerve and Ospreay did. These two were both over like crazy. Will Ospreay came out and they did a little tribute to the gentleman, the late great Hayabusa, the gentleman that was basically my gateway to into Japanese wrestling. I got into tape trading back in 96 and I saw Hayabusa on one of these tape trading videos. I'm like, I need to watch more of that. And then I started bleeding into New Japan, All Japan. Obviously, Hayabusa was FNW, UWF, UWFI, All Japan Women, so on and so forth. So Hayabusa is somebody I hold near and dear in my heart because he was my gateway into my love of Japanese wrestling. So he came out dressed up as Hayabusa. Obviously, Hayabusa was the flying assassin, and Will Ospreay is the aerial assassin. And I believe at historic crossover back in 2022, he wrestled for the U.S. title, Shota Umino. And Will Ospreay was a heel in that match, but he came out as Hayabusa in the Hayabusa gear. Then he autographed it and then sold it and then all the money that he made from that, I believe he gave to Hayabusa's family.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so Will Ospreay, A-OK guy. I remember, like, well, he's supposed to be a heel. Like, why are we reporting that? I'm like, I get it. I get it. But and then I think Swerve was over a little bit more than Ospreay because he came out with a famous rapper that I don't think any of us knew, because as soon as the guy came out, the place went absolutely ballistic. Yeah. So obviously not our cup of tea. We are more of the, Sean's more of the alternative guy, which I do enjoy. But me and Andy Hedder, we are heavy metal all the way. So, but no, Ospreay got a great reaction, but I think Swerve's reaction was a little bit better because he brought in the, I believe it's one guy that's,
Jim Jones, not the televangelist or call leader.
Yes, sir. That's what
I never heard of this guy. And apparently he did part of the song and the crowd knew it and they chanted along. I mean,
but okay, it just made this match even so much bigger. And boy, howdy, Mr. Sean, this was a match.
It sure was, man. I mean, again, hot right out the gate.
The reversals and everything.
Oh my goodness!
That was that opening sequence was awesome. That was just opening sequence where they didn't really get anything on each other except the reversals. Kind of like Will Ospreay and Ricochet from that classic.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. I was wondering if we were going to see Ricochet pop up afterwards, but maybe they're saving that for Wembley.
At one point, you had a top rope cutter right into the Os cutter. You know what I mean? Which was a great combo, great setup. I felt like there was an appropriate amount of false finishes in this match. They told a really, really good story. And then coming up to the end where, you know, Ospreay's got nothing left in the tank, but he's not willing to give up. And then he takes one last kill shot.
He goes for a strike on Swerve and Swerve just absorbs it.
Because he checked for the hidden blade, there was nothing left in the tank.
Yep. Yeah,
he hits it with the kill shot, and then I believe he finished with the JML driver, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So this
match was really good. Watch more matches on the show, make sure it's this one. And then leave it to me. Yeah. But it's so good. A lot of false finishes at the end, and I think they did the right thing by keeping the belt on Swerve.
Callis tried to interject himself into the match, which seemed kind of silly.
There's a point where Ospreay is going for the front hidden blade. Swerve ducks and he takes out the ref, and then Don Callis comes down and he tries to give a screwdriver to Will Ospreay, trying to get him to big turn the dark side using the screwdriver on Swerve.
Dark side.
And he was gonna murder Nana with it.
Yeah, then he goes at Nana. Thinks better, drops it, gets back in, takes a kick, and then the Meteora, but then kick out there. But yeah, finally Swerve gets with the JL driver. But a very good match. If it's not 5 stars, it's damn near close.
Did I ever tell you guys that Nana randomly texted me?
Really?
He has my number confused with somebody else that works in production. And he texted me about 3 or 4 years ago saying, "Hey, man, it was really good seeing you again. Thank you for the opportunity for AEW. If you guys need me, you know, for managing or commentating, let me know." And I was like, "Hey, Nana." I said, "I don't know who you're trying to get a hold of. It's Matt Turner, a former Ring of Honor student." And he's like, "I know who you are." He's like, "Hey, man, what's going on?" He goes, "I forget who you're trying to reach. Might have been either Jerry Lynn or BJ Whitmer." He's like, "For some reason, I have your numbers confused. And our numbers even the same?" He's like, "No." I said, "Yeah, because my area code is, you know, Scranton, Pennsylvania. And Jerry Lynn's is probably like Minnesota, or Whitmer's is like Cleveland or something." So, yeah. And it was like literally like once every other year, it'd be like, "Hey, you know, how's everything? I'll let you know on that booking." And I'm like, "No, again, you got the wrong person, Matt." And he's like, "Hey, man, why we're chatting? How's everything? How's your family?" So I will get once every 3 years, I'll get a random text message from this man.
Does Nana not have anybody's number saved in his phone and just always types in a phone number to send a text?
Random number, I don't know.
What is going on?
I don't know. Nana's
saved this dude two.
He's like, "Oh, I better text Swerve." So he starts typing in his whole phone number.
Swerve, you get a text? No? Oh.
must have went to Matt Turner.
Went to Matt Turner. No, he was always so good to him. Again, he was obviously the big heel manager, but nothing like that in real life. He was always so great to other Ring of Honor students. Literally the point where he randomly texts me every now and again. So I will keep you updated when I get a text message from the manager of the world champion, once Swerve Strickland. Yeah, this was an epic main event. A great way to end this show. Again, considering the fact that we saw a lot of wrestling. The match before, the crowd was kind of quiet. But from like as soon as Will Ospreay's music hit, this crowd was electric. They literally, they didn't care that they sat through that it was 11:30. They were there to see Ospreay and Swerve, and these two absolutely delivered. So a great match to end a great show. Before we close this out, when we plug everything up, there was a big announcement that came out today that there will be a show in the legendary Tokyo Dome. Wrestle Dynasty, I believe that's the name, Wrestle Dynasty, which will be taking on the 5th of January, one day after Wrestle Kingdom. So if anybody is in Japan for the New Year's within 2 days, well, actually on the 3rd of January, there is a Stardom show and then a Stardom pay-per-view. And then on the 4th, you'll have your traditional Wrestle Kingdom. And the very next day, Wrestle Dynasty in the Tokyo Dome. It is New Japan, it is CMLL, it is Stardom, it is Ring of Honor, and it is AEW. So I'm super excited for that. Stardom has had a legit cup of coffee in the Tokyo Dome. They did a match back in 2020 that never saw air. It was a dark match. I actually had it sent to me. I shouldn't even be saying that. But it was a dark match that was not even supposed to air. And then back in, I believe it was 2021, we had a really good match with Tam Nakano and Sai Kamatani teaming up to go up against the MK Sisters of Starlight Kid and Mayu Iwatani. That match went literally just a few minutes, like 6 or 7 minutes. And then I might be off by a year on my dates, but then the next year,
was a match they still get pissed off talking about. Kairi's very first defense of the IWGP Women's Championship against Tam Nakano in a match that got about 5 minutes. So, yeah, wasn't too happy about that. But it looks like Stardom is going to get their just due. Fingers crossed inside the Tokyo Dome. And considering the fact that CMLL is on that show, maybe we will get some Steph Thacker on that show. Yes, maybe he gets one of Tam Nakano or Shuri, or I mean, the lists are endless. But considering the fact, you know, we have Ring of Honor on there, so I'm assuming maybe some Athena, some Mark Briscoe, the stars from AEW will be there. So that's a great two-hit combination. Three-hit, really. You have Stardom on the 3rd of January, you have Wrestle Kingdom on the 4th, and then Wrestle Dynasty on the 5th. I already know that I'm going to be using my vacation days for Christmas and looping them over so I can watch those three shows in the comfort of my own home at 3 a.m. because I'm absolutely insane. Gentlemen,
that's the way it should be.
Before we wrap this up, is there anything else that we want to talk about? No, let's do our top three matches. Let's do our top three matches. Mr. Sean, what do you have for your top three matches from this show?
Top three matches. I'm going to say... excuse me. Now I'm probably going to criminally forget.
So Pentico versus what's his name?
Well, no, I thought I'm supposed to start with three and then end with one.
Oh, and then
right? Yeah. Is that right? Okay. All right. So, yeah. Unless there's something that I'm criminally forgetting because I'm very tired, I'm going to say that for me, number two on the card would be the, number three. I'm sorry. Number three on the card would actually, for me, I think it was the trios match that...
from 0 Hour.
Yeah, from 0 Hour.
QVC guy.
Yeah, Lucha Brothers versus the Los Angeles Demo.
Yeah, I thought that match was amazing. I thought it set a great tone. It was really, really exciting. More exciting than I expected for a 0 Hour match to be. And it really got me fired up for the beginning of the show. Second would be the Elite versus Tanahashi and the Acclaimed. I'm the worst.
Forget.
I don't know which match I gotta take that take out of that.
We got a tie here for two.
But I gotta put the ladder match in there.
Oh.
Right, that ladder match was great. A lot of great spots. Man, I don't know. But I will say this. Number one for me, clearly Ospreay versus Strickland. Mm-hmm. That match was incredible. It was everything it was built to be. I don't think I've ever seen in my limited experience watching him. I don't think I've ever seen a bad Ospreay match. I don't know if that exists. But if it does, it hasn't crossed my eyes yet. You know, Swerve as champ has been just an absolute joy to watch. He's doing great work, I think, in all facets. Now, obviously, I'm not a wrestler. I know you guys see things a little bit differently, maybe. But I'm just saying, I think he's killing it. I think he's doing a great job representing the company, being the face of the company. And the big thing with Swerve that I think he needs to be, and that carries into this match with his promos with Ospreay and everything, is he's not joking around. He's not playing around.
No.
This is his life. You know, this is everything to him. And I believe every word he says. And I believe that he believes every word he says. That's what you need. So that's definitely my number one. I'm going to say that I'll take the two trios matches I mentioned and tie them for number three. But I'll have the ladder match as my number two.
Oh, there you go. Andy Hedder, I got a feeling me and you are pretty much going to
probably have the exact same, maybe slightly different order.
Which match did I forget?
Yeah, we'll get there. And you said you're tired. I am an hour and a half shy of being up for 24 hours straight.
This guy's a trooper.
So, yep, that trooper. Hey, it's a pay-per-view. We don't go all the time. I get to hang with you guys all the time, so why not? You always say, you sleep when you're dead. Anyway, coming in at number three, Brian Danielson versus Shingo Takagi.
Oh my God, how did I forget that match?
This match was awesome.
I am the worst.
I was looking forward to this. It was very good. At least 4, probably 4.5 stars.
coming in second, the one I was probably looking forward to the most, Mina Shirakawa versus Toni Storm, my favorite, who I may or may not cosplay as in New York City Comic Con this year.
Yes. As Mina or Tony? I don't want to know. I tell you, when Rob listens to this, he asked, now that we just got the tickets for New York Comic Con, he's like, you know what Andy's going to go as? I said, I don't know, and I don't want to know. I like knowing the surprise. So, oh, and he listens to this back, the fact that you're dressing up as Tony or Mina.
It's going to be good, and I have it all picked out already. And number one, of course, Swerve Strickland versus Will Ospreay. It was awesome. And I think Big Dave will probably give this one 5 stars, so that was my number one match of the show. The show was really good, and happy we won. It was a long show, but it went fast when you're there, and I enjoyed it. It was my first AEW show, first AEW pay-per-view, so that's my top three. Matt, what was your top
three? I thought we were going to be dead on, my man.
Before you do, I just want to say how unbelievably disappointed in myself I am that I forgot about the Bryan Danielson match.
That's good when there's that many good matches you forget.
Yeah, but also...
You don't want it the other way where you're like, I don't know if I'm going to pick three, you know? You don't want that.
Oh, that's true.
The ladder match was really good. No, you had a lot of really good ones there. My number three was Tony and Mina. So you actually, and I'm the stardom, well, I guess we're all stardom guys here, but I'm the diehard stardom guy. The fact that you would like that over the Battle of the Dragons, that's saying something. I know Meltzer did point out, he was live tweeting like a couple sentences about the show, and he thought Tony Storm and Mina Shirakawa was absolutely excellent. And he said he absolutely loved the story that they told at the end with Mariah May about how they're all getting along, and hopefully he's on board with us, with maybe the two of them going back over to start a team with Mina. And that'd be really cool, because then maybe you see some cracks in EXV when we see Micah doing some stuff. Like, I'd love to see Micah and Tony Storm throw down. Like,
Timeless Rose Gold.
Yeah, look out. But, that's a good one. Timeless Rose Gold. So I wonder how Luther would get out, because they don't have really managers in Stardom.
They don't. I wonder if they would take him. I mean, that would kind of add to it, but, you know.
That's part of Tony Storm's gimmick. So, but that was number three for me. That match was absolutely fantastic. I liked it just a little bit better than the Mercedes versus Steph Backer match. Number two for me was the Battle of the Dragons, Bryan Danielson versus Shingo Takagi. And then, yes, my number one was Will Ospreay versus Swerve Strickland for so many different reasons. Obviously, it was a great match. The fact that we were 5 hours into wrestling, the crowd was into everything from the time Ospreay came out to the time that Swerve shook Ospreay's hand after the match was over. We did make mention that this was a match that Swerve absolutely needed. He had a pretty good match with Samoa Joe to win the belt. Then he had a pretty good match with Christian to retain the belt, but he needed an absolute home run banger to really set his stock up. And it's exactly what Swerve needed to really take this championship run to the next level. So, that match was great for all sorts of reasons. But gentlemen, as we are winding things down, is there anything else that we want to say or talk about before we give our plugs and call it a podcast?
I just want to say that, kind of touching on something you had said before, this was an absolute pleasure. One of the most fun shows that I have been to from the standpoint of the company that I keep. I had a great time hanging out with you, Matt, and a great time hanging out with you, Andy. I don't get to see you enough. I love you, man. I love both of you guys. This is just a great time. Minus the traffic, everything else was great. So, awesome time, awesome show, and I'm so happy that we went.
Andy, anything before we give our plugs?
I didn't do best gear and best hair, which I normally do for the females. I gotta get best gear for Mina's new gear was awesome. So she gets best gear and best hair. No one had anything to place when Tam's on the show. Tam has purple hair. I probably gotta give it to Tam. I love Tam. There you go.
I love Tam. We love some Tam. Sean, why don't you tell our listeners where they can find you at?
Well, you can find me two places. If you want to find me on social media, my personal account, I am generally found like on Instagram at Sean, S-E-A-N, Sean on the drums. If you want to follow my growing business brand for if you need any commercial voiceover work, voiceover talent stuff, or if you need a wedding officiant and you want to pay for my travel, I do a hell of a good job with that. You can find me doing that and so much more at The Guy for the Gig.
Mr. Hedo.
So you want to find me on the Twitter I have a very funny name. I am at Get Some Header on Twitter, and just to find out on Instagram or Facebook, I'm at Andy Header. You can contact me there and talk about wrestling, video games, or book me for a wrestling show. That's fine too. You do that too. So yeah, that's where you find me.
Folks, just make sure you pay him.
Yeah, please pay.
Yes.
It's
terrible.
Not just auto.
That's right. Anywho, folks, questions, comments, anything that I can do for you, suggestions for a future Patreon episode for one mean Andy Header, Matt Turner OF on the Instagram and or the Twitter. The best way to get a hold of me via the social media scene. If you want to shoot me an email, that's perfectly fine as well. TheStardomCast22@gmail.com is the best way to get a hold of me via the email system. Folks, that's going to wrap it up for another bonus episode here. We thank everybody for bearing with us. And I hope you all enjoy the AEW pay-per-view and are enjoying this crossover we are getting with AEW and Stardom. Super excited for that. We greatly appreciate your support. Can't do it without you. So like I always say, it's just not my podcast. It's our podcast. Because we're all together. Everybody's different. Everyone's special.